After School Special Podcast. After School Special Podcast. After School Special Podcast. After School Special Podcast.
I'm driving in my car. I turn on the radio.
Look at this thing. Look, Flipper.
They have signs. They have big signs that say, you will not get into the kingdom of heaven. And I look at these geeks and go, are you going to be there? I'm not going.
I did Waiting for Godot. Yeah. I did Shakespeare. It's exciting to wear tights and have people go, I can't see anything.
Just take off.
Isn't he fabulous?
Oh, kind of, dear, if you like that handsome, rugged type. But personally, I prefer short, furry, and funny.
Can you tell us what you've found out about the enemy since you've been here?
We found out that we can't find them.
But I'm not afraid. This is Mork, signing off till next week. Nanu, nanu.
Hello, everyone. Not being gender non-specific, my name is Aaron. We have Staff Man Double D. This is After School Special Podcast. We're talking about one of our favorite comedians, comedic actors. We've wanted to do this episode for a while, and it's coming up on the dude's birthday. We, today, on After School Special Podcast, present our Robin Williams episode. So, before I get into just some of the back stuff, do you remember the first time you ever saw him in anything?
So it was definitely Hook. Yeah, it was Hook.
I saw him, and I think it was one of the comic relief stand-ups that he did with Billy Crystal and Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, now that you mention it, yeah. See, I wasn't into stand-up as fast as you were. That shit didn't make sense to me. It was like cartoons was my stand-up when I was a kid. Mm. And I had older cousins.
Yeah.
And when I would go over there, they were looking at stand-up. Although our stand-up was Def Comedy Jam.
Yeah.
Russell Simmons. But occasionally, because they had cable, they would watch HBO stand-up. And he was one of those showcase stand-up comedians. But I was a kid. I didn't get what that... I just thought he was a cartoon character. But that was... You're right. That was the first time I saw him.
He never considered himself a comedian. He considered himself probably a comedic actor because of what he does on stage is just a lot of it's imitation. And he's just living in someone else's skin is basically what he said. Just
he
to
used
get
it
into,
as a vehicle. That's the way.
Yep.
Yeah,
exactly. Just to get into a little bit of the backstory of Robin Williams. Robin McLaurin Williams. Born July 21st, 1951, American actor, comedian, improv, basically anything and everything when it comes to entertainment, this man was able to do. He was a graduate from Juilliard, as far as I remember. I think he came in there his junior year or something like that. And then he began performing stand-up comedy in San Francisco and LA, like Comedy Store. That was mid-70s. And then finally, he was introduced to the world as an alien in the TV show Happy Days and tested so well with audiences. He became Mork from Mork and Mindy, or Mork from Ork and Shazbot and all those things.
Nanu, nanu.
Mork and Mindy brought him into the limelight, made him extremely popular, and he learned the ways of Hollywood pretty quickly when the movie Popeye came out.
What am I? I'm Popeye, the sailor. And I am what I am, what I am, and I am what I am, and that's all that I am, because I am what I am.
Robin Williams. Shelley Duvall.
You're falling
behind! In Popeye.
Everyone remember Popeye,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, maybe that was Popeye. The first thing. Maybe that movie was the first time I saw Robin Williams. I'll take that back.
That might have been the same for me too, which was a horrible way to start off watching Robin Williams.
What?
I hated that movie. I fucking hated that movie, man. His depiction of Popeye, he looking at it now, genius. The man is a genius. But when I was a kid, I was like, I fucking hated Popeye when I was a kid.
As a character.
Yeah, just like a cartoon and then like the movie. So what kid did like Popeye?
I did. Age? Me.
You guys are both fucking psychopaths.
Popeye was, you know what, this is another episode, but Popeye is the, actually will be considered the first superhero because of his power and everything like that.
I'm with you, John. Like, he single-handedly made me want to eat spinach because I thought it was going to give me powers. How influential that character was, even before I saw Robin Williams play him in that movie. But yeah, I was a big Popeyes fan. I don't know.
He single-handedly brought about the rise in popularity of spinach.
Yeah, for sure. Because,
I hate spinach. And I'll eat it right
big,
now.
I did too. What is it? The big corporation spinach.
Oh, they got me. They got me.
Yeah.
Because I thought you
Wait a minute. That's not big corporation. That's small farmers.
that's big corporation government. Down with the government. Yeah.
Big spinach.
Big spinach.
There well, I go. Thought it'd make you big and strong, but now that we're
No, it just gives you kidney stones.
No, it doesn't. Shut the fuck up. But it doesn't, like, you don't gain muscle from that shit. They were acting like you were going to Hulk out, like fucking Bruce Banner with that shit. But I believed it. Yeah, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to get a six pack. I'm going to get these pythons in it. Man.
Yeah, yeah. But I just got the shit. His biceps were small, but his forearms was huge.
That's all you got were the shits.
I got the shits. It's still healthy, right? Spinach? Yeah.
I don't know. I'm on the carnivore diet.
It's not healthy in a can, probably, but it's healthy.
God, no.
Yeah.
But all the stuff that he ate, no. You'd be better off eating, you know, raw spinach, cooking it up with a little bit of olive oil, salt and pep.
Here you go.
Good to go. So Robin Williams was born in Chicago, Illinois. And then when he was 12, he moved to Detroit.
To the D.
His father was trans. Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I wrote it down. Because I saw it in that HBO documentary that came out
today.
Like a couple years ago. Yeah, he was in Detroit. I didn't know that it was in Bloomfield Hills.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. So he was pretty well off. Oh, wow. They lived in a 40-room farmhouse on 20 acres.
Well, his dad was an executive for Ford Motor Company, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And his mother was a former fashion model.
So like I said, he had started going to Juilliard. He had gotten a full scholarship, and that's where he met Christopher Reeve. Mm-hmm. They were the only two accepted by John Houseman into the advanced program at the school. And John Houseman, I don't know a lot about him, but I know he is revered very high up with actors and actresses, drama, comedic, everything. But yeah, he was really good friends with Christopher Reeves.
Well, he bounced from Detroit because they moved to San Francisco for a second. And then he went to school there to college. But you saw in the documentary, like I did, Aaron, like he didn't stay there long. He was more interested in improvisation. Yeah.
He studied political science at Claremont Men's College, now Claremont McKenna College, where he began taking courses on improvisation.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw that he was primarily raised as an only child, right? And that's where
He had two brothers, but they were mainly raised separately.
I hadn't known his history before I watched his documentary. Not really. I just knew later on he eventually got to the Comedy Store and he ended up with Pryor and Leno and started hanging out with those guys, but we'll talk about that later. But the way he was raised is, outside of being rich and white, it was very similar to how I was raised. Like, because even though I had an older sibling who, as I gotten older and realized, like, oh, yeah, I guess technically he is my half brother. But I was not raised that way. My mom never taught me to say, oh, yeah, that's your half brother. But the way he was raised, as far as a only child being in the household, is like, yeah, you either become a person that gravitates to a lot of people and befriend them, like you have a lot of friends, or you just develop your own world in your own room or your own household. And I think that's what I did. And you just start developing characters and you just start trying to entertain yourself. And that reminded me of me so much when I saw that in the documentary.
Yeah, my kid is like that now, where he has a lot of friends because he is an only child. He's a social butterfly.
Yeah, you do either or. Or the third option is just...
You don't want them to go emo, where they're just like,
yeah,
hate the world and like we always keep him in something, not to make it about us, but he's very sociable when it comes to doing stuff. But when we don't go somewhere, he's very creative.
Yeah,
he likes to do things with his hands. He likes to create and make things and really junk up my house. But
that can hurt you too. And I can speak from experience, not knowing social cues, because I'm only bouncing off myself here. So when I get out there, when as a kid, the anxiety level, because you can pretend how people are going to react to your stuff when you're playing by yourself. But when you actually go out into the real world with real kids with different backgrounds than yours, you find out very quickly, like, oh, everybody doesn't goof around like I do. You learn very early, you have to kind of temper yourself a little bit.
Yeah, it's for me, like growing up with brothers and whatnot, because I'd always have one of them be like, if I made a joke and the person wasn't laughing, they were going to try to pick on me, I would just turn around and be like, look at this fucking idiot. He doesn't.
So, yeah, you had an audience.
He doesn't understand so knock-knock so jokes, you fucking idiot.
So you put the attention on the person who doesn't.
Yeah, exactly.
He'll just lash out.
Yeah. Oh, fucking bullying 101.
But a lot of the stuff you're talking about, the crowd work, I thought that was so taboo when I saw it. Because usually comedians, their one job is to get on stage and, you know, make the crowd laugh. And the only time they involved the crowd, in my experience, was if there was a heckler or they trying to make fun of somebody in the crowd, but not trying to shame them for not laughing at the jokes. And when I saw this documentary of Robin Williams, a lot of his comedic work was crowd work when he would go into the crowd and involve them that way, at least early on.
Wasn't even like it was movement. The stuff that he did was get them involved and not do it in a way where he's like putting them down. He's literally
involving
them.
Yeah.
Physically.
Yeah.
And it was different than anything anyone's seen. I think it's in that same documentary, Letterman was saying, is like, we didn't know, you know, like if we keep up with this guy, like if how our little jokes were going to do against him. And I'm like, yeah, no, that would be daunting. Like if I was going there to, you know, go to the Comedy Store, walk in, I'm like, I'm getting ready to audition. Then I see Robin Williams and I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just, I don't know.
How do you follow that?
Mother's vagina.
Yeah. How do you follow that, man? There's no way to follow someone with that type of energy. You know, I know him and was it John Belushi? We're close.
Hmm. Yeah.
Right. And I remember on watching one of these made for TV movies about Robin Williams where they were cracking on each other. Robin was performing and John was cracking on him. He had just walked into the set and started cracking on him and they were going back and forth and the audience was eating it up. Yeah, I don't know if that was true, but it was in the movie.
They had said that at the Comedy Store documentary that came out like a year or two ago on Showtime. They had said the same thing.
Yeah.
That Belushi and him would just go at each other and people were like loving it.
Yeah.
It happened in the main room.
That's back when comedy was like harmless. You know what I'm saying? Like Richard Pryor could say to someone, like somebody said something about his mama and Richard Pryor was like, I'm about to smack this dude in the mouth with my dick. That's back when you could do that and you didn't have to worry about anybody streaming it or recording it and then it words getting twisted, you know. That's back like Aaron and I was talking earlier about George Carlin. Carlin was phenomenal. You know what I mean? Like his performances were by far just magnificent. The seven things you can't say on television and it goes off like clockwork. He's the only one who can do that joke because he did it. And Robin did a joke later in his career about golf.
And you realize how drunk they get. They could wear a skirt and not care. And how they could invent a sport like golf. Here's my idea for a fucking sport. I knock a ball in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like pool?
Fuck off, pool. Not with a straight stick, with a little fucked up stick. I whack a ball that goes in a gopher hole.
Oh, you mean like croquet?
Fuck croquet. I put the hole hundreds of yards away. Oh, fuck out, It's great fun there. Oh, yeah, that's a great thing.
oh my God, if you've ever seen it, it'll have you laughing and sweating because of how much activity he does going into describing how awful golf is.
And so, I would agree. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
I like playing it, but it's so aesthetically boring. Oh,
I'm good at putt-putt. I'm terrible at it.
I took a golf class at Wayne State, though.
Took a golf class. Of course you did. I took one at Marygrove College.
Oh, shit. That was right around the corner from me. That was on West McNichol, 6 Mile.
And, yeah, I took one over there.
Hey, babies. You liking the show? Well, thanks. Leave a 5-star rating and a comment, please. Do you want to see the guys' faces? Well, they got YouTube videos. It comes out every Wednesday before the episode comes out on Friday. You can watch this podcast on any major platform you listen to. Rate 5 stars and comment. Thanks, babies.
So he ends up in Juilliard with Christopher Reeves, right? That's what you were saying.
And then heads to L.A. and San Fran, starts doing the comedy scene. And then we start getting into the movies, Mork and Mindy and all that stuff, which I kind of already talked about. And then we start getting into his films after Popeye failing. That was a huge punch to the gut. Yeah, that's when he starts doing stand-up, comic relief, movies, not so much TV shows. I think really he ended up having that one show near the end of his life. I think it was on NBC. But people had seen him and he was losing weight for no reason and just wasn't himself during that. You could tell, and I think it was canceled within the first season, I thought.
Yeah, it was on CBS, the Crazy Ones.
Oh, okay.
Played the head of an ad agency. It premiered later in the year and it was canceled in 2014. He had two films that came out during the end of his life, which was The Angriest Man in Brooklyn and Boulevard, which both came out in 2014. It's still surreal to say that he's gone. You
know? Well, before we get into that, let me just finish up the
the
film stuff, and then we can talk a little bit about that. So 1989, he does Dead Poets Society. He gets more into dramatic roles and gets away from the stand-up and the comedic aspects. 1989, Poets Society, and then soon after that, Awakenings was 1990, which he portrays a Dr. Oliver Sacks. It's based off of him and the experience he had with these. It's a neurological.
Yeah, they wouldn't talk or do anything until you did a stimulant to them.
It says Parkinism.
Like some sort of.
It says Parkinism? Yeah.
Parkinson's? Is it Parkinson's?
I'm reading Parkinsonism. Parkinsonism. Oh, okay. That's what it said. Parkinsonism. That doesn't make sense.
Robert De Niro was in that too,
right? Yeah, he is.
Yep.
Directed by Penny Marshall.
And then you have Hook and The Fisher King. The Fisher King? I never saw The Fisher King.
What? Okay, first of all, motherfucker, I know we were limited on time, but how are you just going to drive past Hook like that? Are you kidding me? he had a little film Hook and no. That's my childhood right there, motherfucker. When did that come out? 93.
Hook. My God, the children.
Maggie!
The stories are true. He's come back to seek his revenge. Only you can save your children. You must make yourself remember.
Remember what?
Peter, don't you know who you are?
Have to fly. Have to fight. Have to crow. Have to save Maggie. Have to save Jack. Okay, he's back. Who?
You know MJ was offered that role?
That's so he says. Do you believe him,
John?
That's
weird. That's fucking weird.
I would not have liked that movie if it was MJ. Well, you know what? Let me rephrase that. If it was brown skin MJ, maybe.
Hell, but, well...
I'm talking about MJ from Thriller. If it was that MJ.
Well, do I believe...
Also, it was 1991.
All right.
Yes, it was. When did the MJ scandal start happening? Around that time?
Well, there were always...
There was always some
whispers.
Yeah.
Flutters.
Little whispers in the wind. And then it came to a head near his death as well.
What do you mean?
He had a couple. Yeah. The kids.
He died on my birthday. Son of a bitch.
Did he?
Ruined my birthday.
Yeah, man. I remember that. That was the first birthday I ever celebrated with you. And it was so, so weird. So weird. We'll get to that another day. But
I don't really want it. That was a weird time in my life too.
But yeah, Hook. I don't know about MJ playing Peter Pan, because not that he couldn't muster up a performance. The thing about Hook, it's about a middle-aged Peter Pan.
Yeah.
Who gets amnesia, forgets who he is, he goes to the real world, and then finds out that he's Peter Pan and he has to relearn everything. Like, can you really?
And him and the lady who played the older Wendy.
Oh, I love her.
Is she Maggie.
She plays McGonagall.
Yeah. I can't remember her name.
And the rich people show in the World War One times.
Oh yeah, Downtown Abbey or
Downtown Abbey.
Downington Tabby.
You want to know something strange? Because that's fairly recent, right? Downtown Abbey. Dear Abby.
Yeah, and they already have a movie. Two movies, I think.
Two movies.
The thing about it was 91. I saw her then, and I'm sure makeup and stuff, they made her look older than she probably was, but I thought she was old then. So fast.
Yeah, they
you
made...
You see pictures of her when she was younger?
She's probably smoking. Retrospect.
I will not be inappropriate. She was absolutely a vision.
A fox. Maggie Smith, I think.
Yes.
Retrospect.
Maggie.
Retrospect. Yeah, I thought she was old then. So I'm like, wait.
Yeah, Dame Maggie Smith. That's so, her name.
Fast forward, she's in that show. I'm like, oh, this is an older show, right? Like, because this person cannot be alive still, right? But yeah.
Yeah.
She's still alive and kicking.
Good for her, though. But you know what?
For living?
She's over in Great Britain, you know, having their fish and chips. They don't have to deal with the same BS we're dealing with over here.
Yes, they do. Didn't they have a prime minister to just step down?
But he stepped down willingly. We have people who want to stay pressure. In.
No, he had pressure. He just finally like,
let me get out of this.
Peace out. Peace out, brother.
Boris Johnson is what happens when you stay on your mother's tit for too long.
Oh my God.
He does have that face. He does have that face. But Hook happens. Like, does anybody know why Spielberg chose Robin Williams? Outside of the obvious, everybody sees the child version grown up in Robin Williams. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
If they could just stay a kid at that our age or that age at the time, is like, yeah, I would be Robin Williams.
You know what? I want to say, I think we appreciate it more now that we're older, because when we saw it, I was like, this isn't Peter Pan.
I did not think that.
Really?
You're alone.
You were already thinking as a middle-aged black man? But like what I'm saying is like, as I'm not thinking of what you just said, where it's like you're thinking, you know, middle age, if I could only just be a kid. When I was a kid, I thought I was going to be a kid forever. And then you start growing up, and then, you know, women don't find you attractive anymore because of your age and possible sugar intake that makes your gut a little bit bigger than it should be.
A little paunchy.
Yeah, but no, I could see little child Don, you know, 36-year-old child Don.
Well, my point, okay, and this is related to Robin Williams. Back in the day, Northland, we had a mall called Northland in Detroit, and they would have a Peter Pan exhibit. I think it was around, do you remember this, John? It was around, I think, Christmas when they did this.
I don't remember that. I remember the Mowgli statue. They had a Mowgli and Baloo statue.
But they had a Peter Pan exhibit, and it was in JCPenney's. So I think it was around Christmas. Every time my mom would take me, and you would see these beautiful displays. Not just like, oh, a picture of Peter Pan. It was like straight up like going into an exhibit for real. So right before the movie came out, I was pumped up. And the thing about Hook, I understand what you're saying, Aaron. It's like, well, that's not Peter Pan. I want to see how he was when he was a kid. Mm-hmm. But I think I've always been fascinated with origin stories. So seeing him be an older man, fat, and, you know, real stern, and then kind of metamorphosize or kind of like, you know, change into Peter Pan, I thought that was exciting. Like, oh, fuck. It was awesome just to see the change. I don't know. As a kid, I always like origin stories or Rocky type of stories. And that kind of was a Rocky story. And besides, those kids that were in that movie, I really liked that little kid and the little girl.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name.
Was Hook then Apollo Creed to Peter Pan's Rocky?
No, because Apollo made Rocky better. Hook,
he kind of did.
Well, you know what,
like,
man?
Clubber Lang, maybe?
Clubber Lang. Clubber Lang.
In that movie.
You know what made me mad about that movie? The alligator or the crocodile. What made me mad was the fact that we had to see the crocodile stuffed rather than actually moving in the water. I always had a thing for TikTok croc. And you know why I've been like that since Disney's Peter Pan? I've always loved when that crocodile is munching on Hook, like going after Hook. And this one kind of sucked because Hook disappeared. And I'm like, how did he get eaten? I don't understand. Like, I never understood the ending of that. Like, did he jump up in his mouth? Or I never understood.
And see, yeah, how he must have just like climbed in there, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. I never understood.
Like, well, I'm going to go
magic.
In here now.
It's Neverland. And see, that's the beauty of that movie. It's not just telling the same old story. Because I knew the story of Peter Pan, but I like to see the aftermath. Like, yeah, what if Peter Pan did grow up? I thought it was so fresh. And
that movie is defying physics, Don. And we don't do that. That's a sin.
What do you mean? Like flying?
I wasn't actually, you know what? I wasn't even thinking about the flying. I was just thinking about the fact that the alligator had
right
its
now?
Snout down and is swallowing Captain Hook.
Yes.
Like he literally had to climb up unless for some reason he's able to flip his tongue back.
Yes.
Aaron doesn't, is in rare form and my stomach hurts from laughing so hard.
You didn't like... Oh,
this doesn't make any sense.
I've always been a sucker for flashbacks. I've always been a sucker for any movie where a character flies. And
yeah.
I like the idea that you fly because of a happy thought. I like the flashback scene of understanding how Peter Pan got lost.
What?
And how... These so many things. Fucking Rufio, the character Rufio.
Toodles finding his marbles at the end.
I like the food scene. I like the movie. I like it more now that I'm older. And then also I realize how short both of them are. They're both pretty short men.
Well, Dustin Hoffman, definitely.
So they seem so tall playing these characters, which is weird. It like made Dustin Hoffman, what, like, almost 6'5",
like a
feel
giant.
Like, yeah.
And what was great about Dustin Hoffman was he has so many good lines, because the one line where he's like, where Robin is saying to him, you looked a lot bigger. He's like, to a 10-year-old, I'm huge.
And I actually, because like you said, when I was a kid, I didn't realize how short he is.
Yeah.
And then as I got older and I saw that movie again and he delivered that line, I was like, you know what? I'm glad they didn't get a taller actor. I'm glad, because it makes so much sense. When you're a kid, when you're at home, or if you're like me, go to these places that are monumental in your life, these places seem so huge. Like my elementary school seems so huge. But now that I look back on it as an adult, I'm like, yeah, those are small ass places. My house was a very small house. So seeing that movie and seeing that scene with Peter Pan and Dustin Hoffman's Hook, it was like, yeah, that makes so much sense that he wouldn't be as tall as he remembered.
And Bob Hoskins is Smee. Smee. Come and stop. When he puts the gun to his head and he's like, I'm getting ready to blow my brains out.
Oh, my God. Yes.
There's nothing. There's no one who can stop me. Goodbye, Smee. Come and stop me, Smee. Smee. come and stop me.
Like, what the fuck are you
doing? What are you doing, Smee? I have this gun to my head. Remove this gun from my head, Smee.
Isn't that kind of strange looking back now, John, of a kid's movie and it's that scene is in there?
Yeah.
It's like a suicidal Captain Hook. But
yeah,
it made so much sense because he didn't have nothing to live for because Peter Pan wasn't Peter Pan.
Peter
anymore.
Was gone, and the only way to get back was to become the surrogate father to Peter's kids. And then the other thing, writing. the hookers in the movie. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember.
Like there were hookers in that movie.
You're right.
Like the sea wenches or whatever you want to call them. And then the mermaids were in there. It was so much like female semi-sexual stuff going on in that movie, like the mermaids coming up and giving him the breath of life.
Oh,
I've always loved that scene. I've always
beautiful
loved that scene.
And the soundtrack of John Williams. Oh.
Yes, yes. But the fun fact I wanted to ask you, who was the couple that was kissing that got the fairy dust on them and started floating in the air?
I know what you're talking about, but I never focused on their faces.
You don't see it. That couple is George Lucas and Carrie Fisher kissing. That was them.
Like, for real, for real?
For real, for real.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's kind of weird.
I know, it is.
I thought you were going to say his wife. I'm like, oh, yeah, that's
no,
nice.
No, it was George Lucas and Carrie Fisher kissing. And Phil Collins was the police officer who came to the house. When
no
the
kidding.
Kids got stolen, yeah.
I have to watch that again. And, of course, we all know now Glenn Close was in the movie.
Yeah, Glenn Close was the pirate that got put in the boo box.
He was great.
The boo box, boo box.
Yes.
Hey, guys. If you like to see us in the flesh, we have video highlights of our episodes we release on every Wednesday before the new episode that comes out Friday. As always, you can catch this podcast on any major platform you listen to podcasts. Please make sure to rate us 5 stars and comment on how you're liking the show. After School Special Podcast.
It's this lady and she's like, hi, welcome to my vagina.
After School Special Podcast.
What robot pet starts out speaking a unique language but eventually speaks English? Gloopy? The fuck is a gloopy?
Podcast comes out every Friday.
You mentioned the Fisher King, which I knew nothing about until I got into high school. And one of my teachers, it's amazing when you look back at school and you think, school sucked. It was boring. And then you realize how many teachers were cool, kind of. And one of those cool teachers, she put on the Fisher King and we were going to like do an assignment around that movie. That's how I saw that movie in 10th grade. And I was like, damn, Robin Williams, he can play these characters. That's when I figured out like, oh, he actually could be a serious actor. I didn't know he had those chops, but that was the first time I saw that movie. It's really good. Really good. And sad as hell.
I loved him in, even though he had a short role, but I knew he could play serious roles when I saw him in Dead Again. When he played the doctor who was having an affair with his patients, but he ends up working in the meat locker. You don't remember Dead Again?
No. What year was this?
With Kenneth Branagh and his wife at the time, Emma Thompson. We all watched this in film class. I know we did, because they played a couple that didn't recognize each other in the present, but in the past, they were somebody completely different. They were a married couple in the past. And Kenneth Branagh is a detective in the future. Emma Thompson is this deaf mute woman who has trauma, who keeps having nightmares, and they come across each other.
That sounds good.
It's a good movie. I thought you guys were in that film class with me when
it came
watched
out that. In 1991.
Dead Again. That was a good one.
Came out in 1991. Jeez.
Yeah.
So, Aaron, we interrupted you, or at least I did. I wanted to get in my Hook movie.
There was actually one that I forgot, which was Good Morning, Vietnam.
Good Morning, Vietnam!
Yeah.
Which actually, that was the one that propelled him to fame. So, yeah, Popeye still kind of slammed him back down to earth, but Good Morning, Vietnam kind of pushed him back up there again. And then going through some of his other movies, you have What Dreams May Come, which,
oh my God,
it was a masterpiece of like just like filmmaking in general and art.
Did y'all like it?
I loved it.
That was based off Dante's Inferno, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. That shit to this day depresses me.
Well, it's just based off of not so much like Dante and what he went through, but like the seven layers of hell. Dante's Inferno.
Did that receive good ratings? Anybody know off top?
I thought it did.
It had a young Cuba Gooding Jr. in it.
Yes.
You guys.
Yep. And then you have Bicentennial Man. I never saw that one.
Bicentennial Man was not, it was long.
What about Good Will Hunting? Are you going in chronological order?
No, I'm not. I was just kind of naming stuff off a little bit because you have Moscow on the Hudson, like all these great movies that he had. But what I was going to say was, and John and I both agreed on it, that it's our favorite performance of his is Good Will Hunting. The character is like, to me, he's gone through a lot. He's a professional, but he's also, he'll knock your fucking teeth out.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I just kind of was like that type of character where it's like an old man that's been through some shit that's trying to just relate to who he's talking to. You don't really get that experience. Or if you do, it's half-hearted and kind of bullshit. It's usually your guidance counselor that's like, you know, yeah, you knocked up Jenny there and, you know, you got it. I don't know what the fuck I'm talking about. Never mind.
No, you got it. You got it. I hear what you're saying. You threw it and I caught it. I know exactly.
So that was your best. Yeah, man. That was in 1997. And I remember seeing that. What was the famous scene in that where Matt Damon was like, don't you do that. Oh, yeah, it's not your fault.
Yeah, don't do that, man. Don't do that, man.
All right. It's not your fault. It's not your fault. Don't fuck with me. It's not your fault. Don't fuck with me, all right? Don't fuck with me, Sean, not you. It's not your fault.
Me and my dad watched that movie together we didn't see it in theaters. We saw it when it came on TV. And that was our running thing together. I would do that to him. I'd be like, it's not your fault. He's like, don't do that, man. Don't do that. I was like, it's not your fault. Don't do that, man. Even though it's not a funny scene.
It's not.
But that was it's just that thing that we, and it's done on Family Guy too. Family Guy did it too. And it was funny.
How you like these apples? I got a number. I can't do a Boston accent. Do it, Aaron.
Do it. Do it, monkey.
I did not say that. Oh, no.
What you just dropped, yeah. You drop your R's. Your R's become H's. You go down to the harbor. Boston. There you go.
Boston.
We also forgot one of the voice roles that he did, the one that he's most famous for, which is Aladdin or Genie.
Yes,
from
dude.
The movie Aladdin.
You big nabob. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend, never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend. You ain't never had a friend like me.
So they did the live action one. Was he still around when
no.
they did the live action?
Okay. The live action one, he passed away. So if I may, I need to get this off my chest. There was no comparison to Genie in the Disney version, the animated one. No comparison. Genie in the animated version was fantastic. You had feelings for that character. There was emotion. Now, I will say Will Smith did the best pre-slap. Will Smith did the best job he could.
Well,
yeah.
We totally bypass another classic Robin Williams movie of the 90s, Mrs. Doubtfire, in 1993.
Yeah.
I just
you like that pivot.
We should have just named which ones because like I'm naming the ones that I remember.
Mrs. Doubtfire.
The most. I okay. Like Awakenings to me is one of the best performances I've ever seen of Robin Williams. Good Will Hunting, and then also Good Morning Vietnam. I felt bad about that one because that movie is absolutely fantastic. But Mrs. Doubtfire, Sally Field,
yeah,
and
Pierce Brosnan, think,
yes, James Bond himself. Do you think this movie would or could be made today?
We talked about this before, and on Broadway, yes, but on an actual film, probably not. I think it could. I think it could be done, but it would have to be a gender swap. That's what I think.
Yeah, I agree. They would have to do this so delicately. Delicately, it wouldn't even, at the end, it probably wouldn't even resemble what Mrs. Doubtfire was in the beginning.
Do you think Robin Williams would have done this movie now, do you think he would have been as successful as he was? Say, like, Robin Williams, his path to greatness is moved up, and he's the age he was when he did Mrs. Doubtfire. Does that make sense?
People would be comparing it, oh, that's just a white Big Mama's house. That's all that is. Because that's the generation we're in. We're in a generation now where they're comparing things to crappy things. That's the generation we're at. You know, like, if they ever did another Thin Line Between Love and Hate, you couldn't get away with that. You couldn't get away with that.
Well,
no, because I think people would be siding with the girl who was being abusive after Martin. People would say, oh, well, she was the victim. She got led on. And you've seen that movie, right, Aaron? Thin Line Between Love and Hate?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That people would be siding with her and looking for ways to question why Martin did what he did, and that he had everything coming to him because of how he... That's how I see it. I could be wrong.
Well, culturally speaking, John, a lot of these movies like Big Mama's House, Thin Line Between Love and Hate, I think... I'm just be real with you. Because it's primarily a black cast, it goes more so under the radar. But if you let that be a white cast, like Robin Williams doing Big Mama House or Robin Williams doing a Thin Line Between Love and Hate, I think the media, he would have caught hell for it. But because it's primarily a black cast, it's like, just black people being black people. And at least that's how I take it. I feel like if those movies came out again today, with a primarily black cast, it would go off, you know, it wouldn't make much noise. But if it was like well-known actors like Robin Williams doing it, then yeah, like, oh, what the, you can't do that, bobbity boobity. You know, they try to be on the right side of history. But when we do it, they have no problems with us dressing up like women.
Yeah.
They have no problems.
Chappelle brought that up.
It's the truth. It's the truth.
It's a very, another episode, minstrel stuff, but it's a whole different episode. But I got another fun fact for you.
Yes.
Do you know what his favorite book was? Robin Williams.
Is it a Dr. Seuss book?
No, it was C.S. Lewis, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
That is a very good book.
He would read this during the AMA. He said, I would read the whole C.S. Lewis series out loud to my kids. I was once reading to Zelda, and she said, don't do any voices. Just read it as yourself. Huh. So I did. I just read it straight, and she said, that's better. I'm imagining the superhuman dad strength it took for Robin Williams to not do the funny voices and sending mad dad appreciation to upward towards the sky. This is from thedad.com. I got another fun fact that's going to trip you guys out. So if Robin could have been any animal, he would have been a dolphin. That's what he said he would have been. Do you know why?
Don't they rape people?
Okay, so going into it. So Robin, on his Ask Me Anything on Reddit, he was like, just their abilities, how they're social, how sexual they are, how intelligent they are, and mainly how social they are. That's Robin. Like, Robin liked the sex and admired that dolphins also like sex.
Yeah, I think in the other episode, I messed up. I said seals do that, but no, it's the dolphins that rape the humans when they get in the water.
I'm gonna tell you right now, man, like, that's a 10-inch bone.
Do they have a 10-inch bone?
Yeah, I remember seeing it on King of the Hill, where they were talking about it. Like, if a dolphin were to rape you, you could be killed by that jet.
Oh, I didn't know that. I just feel like they had a little fish pecker, but they got
No. They got
packing some heat.
Yeah, they packing a wallop. Yeah. Yeah. The whammy. Whammy. That's why Flipper was always coming. You know what I'm saying? When they would call for Flipper, he's like, "Oh, I'm about to get some action."
Well, the other thing I found striking watching that documentary, the HBO documentary about Robin Williams, was they said in real life, like when, you know, basically nobody was around, you know, during the day at least, before his comedy acts, he was kind of a quiet person. Like, it was none of that theatrics that you see on TV or anything like that. It was just, you know, the dichotomy. Like, it sounded like he knew how to cut it off, which I was surprised, because I thought he was just always just on. I'm kind of glad to hear that, because a person like that has to be draining to do what he did.
I think because when he would go home, that was more or less him recharging.
Yeah.
And he'd be silent. He had all those acres of land and whatnot, and just be there and be present. And then when he had to turn it back on, yeah, just probably suck the life out of him, but he's got reserves. So, and going on, you know, some other movies here and there. I think you mentioned some of the last films that he had done. Don, before I continue, were there any other movies that you could think of that I missed?
Yes, Old Patch Dogs. Adams. That was a good
Patch
film.
Adams.
Yeah.
Patch Adams.
Yeah.
He didn't like the movie, right?
Yeah, the actual Patch Adams didn't like it, because he like, if he really was Patch Adams, he would have donated that money. That's what the actual Patch Adams said to Robin Williams. He should have donated the money or something.
But he's not Patch Adams. That's the point. He's in
exactly.
Yeah, I know. But you know how some people are. And Old Dogs with John Travolta, where he finds out he's a parent late in life.
Yep. Well, you have artificial intelligence, AI, Ferngully, but that was 92.
Yeah,
that other was voice acting, robots.
Batty Coda, yeah.
Yep. And then the Happy Feet film franchise with the penguins. With the
penguins, yeah.
Yep. And then some of the last or later films that he did, The Night Listener, Night at the Museum, Secret of the Tomb. Yeah, that's basically Man of the Year.
Night of the Museum was really good. I liked him as Teddy Roosevelt. That was good.
People then kind of started seeing him slumping a little bit.
No, guys, come on. You missed another one. Jumanji.
Oh,
come on, man. Right? We can't end the show without mentioning it. Jumanji. Are you kidding me?
I completely forgot.
I know. It's a big one. That's what she said.
Jumanji was a good one, man.
Well, damn. I didn't catch on to it at first when I was a kid, but later on I saw it again, like right around when the new one came out with The Rock. So I wanted to like go back and see the original. I'm like, oh man, how did I miss this? This was so fun.
I was scared of that game. They had the game that they were selling at Toys R Us. I thought if you played it, you would get sucked in for real.
You thought it was like a Ouija board or something?
Yeah, I was afraid to play the game.
So when I saw Jumanji in theaters and whatnot, Don and you and I were talking about like when we were first introduced to him, that's where I first like knew his name, like 100%. That's Robin Williams. Robin Williams was also in this, and this. And then just to talk a little more about the stand-up stuff, comic relief with Billy Crystal and Whoopi Goldberg. It was a stand-up show. The three would all perform, and all proceeds would go to homeless shelters, I believe, in L.A.
You're probably right, man.
He did a lot of good work.
Yeah.
He would go overseas, too, right?
Yeah. He did a lot of stuff for the USO, performed in front of
people.
Yes, Don. People.
I'm just helping out.
Soldiers. The army.
Brain fog.
No, dude. Man, I get
road trips.
But it's goddamn it.
Shut This is not a test.
We'll return after these messages.
A double pleasure is waiting for you. A double pleasure from Double Mint Gum. A double great feeling, making you realize Double Mint's the one for you. Double fresh, double smooth, double delicious to chew. A double pleasure is waiting for you. Double Mint Gum. A double pleasure is waiting for you. Double Mint Gum.
Hour hand, minute hand, second hand, sweet one. Time is of the essence, gotta pick it up a beat. Cause time is money and money is time. The one that does it faster is the one that we buy. High gear, full tilt, gotta get it done. Quick, 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 bite fast food, eat it on the run. Rush job, turn around, speed is now the key. Tell them that you want it ASAP. Get it in an instant, punch and run. Out 5, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
We live in an instant world, why not make an instant fortune? Play Fortune Instant Lottery, you could win a quick million.
Now, back to our story.
I'll stop bringing up other movies. Didn't he play another, like, scientist? What was that movie?
Flubber?
Flubber! Sorry, I did it again.
You fucking... hey, I don't want to make it seem like I don't like, you know, Robin Williams. I honestly think he is one of the most talented stand-ups ever. Even if he doesn't think he was a stand-up comedian and he's just doing impressions, his timing, and if you would see his performances, the stand-up specials that he did, I thought it was 2009 was the last one he did.
No shit, I didn't know that.
He's one of my favorite stand-ups.
I think if I was to do comedy, I would probably do it like him, because that's kind of what I do. I just kind of throw things at the wall and like, oh, okay, yeah. One of those things worked.
It's similar to Jim Carrey.
Yeah, absolutely. And but Jim Carrey,
it's physical comedy, but like improvisation.
I think he's more physical. I don't know.
He's more
impressions.
Impression.
Yeah.
Like he turns into somebody else. Whereas when Robin Williams does it, I still feel like that's Robin when he like turns into somebody else. He just assumes their skin, but he doesn't try to sound like that person. Whereas Jim Carrey, if you just close your eyes, I'm like, whoa, that's him. That's whoever he's trying to be right now. Like Eddie Murphy can do that too.
Well, to talk about the improvisation thing too, one of my favorite episodes of Whose Line Is It Anyway is the one with Robin Williams.
Oh, when he comes with the Mork suspenders on?
Yeah, he had the blonde hair because I think there was One Hour Photo. That's another movie.
Yeah.
which was an amazing performance. And I thought, was that the film that he got a tie for the like Golden Globe with Jack Nicholson and Daniel Day-Lewis? I think for best dramatic role. I'm pretty sure.
He also did other voice acting in Robots. I forgot that movie.
Oh, yeah. 2005. Robots. Yeah. Do you want to talk about his death?
I was just about to mention something that alluded to it. This high profile celebrity died the way that he died, like Bourdain or Chris Cornell or Kurt Cobain, or you can go down a list. You can always in retrospect go to their work and try to see if you see something. But in all his characters, there was kind of a common strain where it was like he'll go from this levity, high energy, and then like if you really pay attention, yeah, it is like a split second where he kind of just goes profane and kind of dark, like for a second. Like, I don't know if you guys noticed that. I didn't see it as depression. I just saw it as, you know, pacing. So it's not all high energy. But if you look at the movies, like especially Fisher King, where he delivered a really good performance with Jeff Bridges, where this character is a manic, depressive, suicidal character with deep hallucination problems or whatever. But I don't know. It's easy. I guess my point is I'm rambling. In his interviews, he always had an edge that was very understated by the media, like because they just saw the funny. But if you look back, yeah, he
was in some pain.
Yeah, I didn't want to say that, but I don't want to play armchair psychologist where I'm like, oh, of course he was depressed. You can tell in that interview where
he looked down when he said, you know, certain things. It's like, maybe he was just tired that day. I don't fucking know, but I don't know, man. It came as a shock to me when he died. But back in 2014, it just seemed like that. At that time, we were like entering our early 30s, where we've started just to experience loss for many of us for the first time. So when he died, it was like, damn, that was the last of my childhood right there.
A lot of us thought that it was probably because he was depressed. You see his movies, people talk about like how just kind of how he was as a person and that he did have depressive episodes. But then you realize why he did it, because of medical conditions that were starting to progress.
Yeah.
It wasn't because he was depressed. Well, he probably was depressed because of Lewy body dementia.
Oh, is that a fact? Called. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he had Parkinson's. Early onset dementia. It's Parkinson's disease dementia with Lewy body dementia. So he was deteriorating. And with that, you also get like hallucinations. So he was seeing things that weren't actually there. And then the just more or less neurologically just failing, you know, synapses weren't going and whatnot. So he saw the writing on the wall and he wanted to go out with what he thought was a dignified way. Whereas people thought, on his terms, where people thought it was more or less because he was depressed. Yeah, that prognosis gave him depression. But I think the prognosis in general made him decide to do it, or the hallucinations. I don't know how bad they were, but he had been seeing stuff. And that was in the other documentary that was on YouTube as well. But that is the prognosis, Donald. Why you looking like that?
I'm supposed to look happy when you're saying this shit? I honestly avoid
it. You always have a smile on your face.
Well, this is one of my favorite childhood icons in my life, and it was like when he died, I didn't even want to know how he died. I didn't want to know anything about it. My reaction that you're seeing is I'm learning this for the first time. It was like, oh,
you honestly didn't know? Oh shit. Okay.
No, I'm not mad or anything. I wasn't like avoiding it. Like if I would have seen it like on a news ticker or anything like that, I would have read it, but I wasn't like seeking it out. But now that you're saying it out loud, it's like, oh really? I didn't know that. Damn, that's fucked up. I just thought, you know, 3 years later, 2017 in Detroit, you know, Chris Cornell checked himself out.
Yeah.
Anthony Bourdain, there
was a bunch of stuff that was going on. Men's mental health is definitely a massive crisis that needs to be taken more seriously.
Mm-hmm. Well,
anyway,
Robin Williams added a lot of joy to my life. That's the whole point of why we're talking about this. I'm sad that he died the way that he died, but I love Robin Williams and the wealth of material that he left us. I can look at Hook today, I can look at Jumanji today and still laugh and smile just as much as I did as when I was a kid. And I'll always be grateful for him for that. And in a lot of ways, I don't even think of him as passed on. I still, when I see those movies and films, and
it doesn't feel like he's gone.
No, not at all. No, no. And we were talking about musicians that have died. Like I heard a lot of those musicians well after they pass, and I didn't realize that. And the music is just as alive now as if I was listening to that music when they were alive. It's like, oh yeah, this seems like they just made it today. This is fucking, that's art, man.
And weirdly enough, because I'm not really attached to any actors or personalities in general, if someone passes away, be like, ah man, I wish I could have gotten another album, you know, like some, I don't know, or another movie out of them or whatnot. It's, but then I'm looking at them as like a item, you know, not an actual person, something that can give me joy.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty fucked up, isn't it?
No. I mean, that's kind of what they sign up for.
If I see them in the street or something and go up, be one of those people's like, hey, can you sign this piece of paper? Or, you know, like, sign my kid.
Pass on your talent to him.
Yeah.
Or them.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm not one of those people that seeks them out.
Yeah. Me,
like, I'll walk past them and just be like, get on with my day.
But no, I know what you're saying. Like, Robin Williams, he's probably the last celebrity that I would, like, if he was still around us today, I would go up to him and I would thank him for you know, being part of my childhood. Yeah. And I wouldn't just walk by him because he's more than a celebrity to me. It was like, yo, man, you taught me how to smile. And it was just, yeah, just very painful. But he brought a lot of joy. And out of all the actors, I think Jim Carrey is another one. I would shake his hand. I wouldn't ask for an autograph or a picture, but I want him to know that you meant something to me.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, Don. I think that's a solid.
Yeah, I wouldn't do it that way. I would turn around. Hey, you're that fucking guy, right? And just stare at him and then walk away. Get all serious face. Like,
that's also appropriate. I'm sure they're used to that, right? I don't know.
Robin, you're that fucking guy.
I think you do better just going up to him. Just treat him normal, man. Like,
yeah. See, that's usually my frame of mind, John. Like, they're human beings. They get harassed probably every day, all day.
They got the paparazzi in their face all the
time. Yeah, man.
I mean, all you gotta do is just go up and somewhat normal, you know?
Yeah, like, how would I treat someone that's just a regular person? I wouldn't go for physical contact the first time I meet somebody. I would probably just say hello. So that's what I'm gonna do. Say hello. I appreciate your work. You play these cool characters and you made me want to act or even dare to dream to do it. Or even dare to dream to be Peter Pan. Or
okay, buddy, I got to get going here. I appreciate you saying that, but I got to go, okay?
Let go of my hand.
Let go of my hand.
I would do that to Rob Williams. Like, ah, you the man. You the man. No, you the man. No, you the man. But any more thoughts from you guys?
Yes, you were very gentle, Don. Very caressing with our emotions. I appreciate that, and I want to say thank you from the bottom of my heart. Ladies and gentlemen, you got to do me a really big solid. We got a this thing that's it's a YouTube channel, and I need you to subscribe because I promise that I won't shave this beard until we get 500 subscribers. And it's already driving me crazy. And this is only maybe 3 weeks of growth. I don't know if that's a lot. Maybe it might not be a lot. So please subscribe to the YouTube channel. We got a party going on at the Twitter, After School SPE3, Instagram, After School Special Podcasts. Email us at afterschoolspecialpodcasts@gmail.com. Let us know what you're liking about the show. Let us know what you're not liking about the show. If you have any topic ideas, we would love to hear them. Something that you want to know about in the 90s. Possibly, I don't know, Iran-Contra. We could do an episode on that if you want.
We sure could. And that,
how the CIA introduced crack cocaine into urban neighborhoods. And
oh, watch the show Snowfall. Oh, so good.
It is very good.
Oh, you do watch that?
Yes, I do.
Starting when? Because I said that like months ago. You were like, I don't watch that.
I started it probably about a month ago.
Hey, continue. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Anyways, you know, rate us, subscribe. It doesn't even have to be like if you want to be one of those guys that's like just a dick and give like 3 stars. I'm like, very good, you know, and then that's it. You don't say anything else other than that. We want to know what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. So help us help you listen to us.
Any quick shout outs? Doom Generation Podcast. What else? There was a podcast that gave us a nice, nice written review. Their podcast is called Getting Down and Wordy. They gave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts. And of course, Doom Generation always shouts us out. And
Quad Pro Quo Podcast.
Sweet. Quad Pro
Quo. They like all our stuff and whatnot. They're super supportive. So we always try to give love back. And then, you know, listeners, we got Tommy, Tim Tom, Team Tom 2, Tibby Tap, Tip Tap Tom. My Tommy. Friend and your friend too, if you ever get to meet him, Tom on the Town.
Tom on the Town. What up?
And then, yeah, that's about it. That's all I got, baby.
Please, don't worry so much. Because in the end, none of us have very long on this earth. Life is fleeting. And if you're ever distressed, cast your eyes to the summer sky, when the stars are strung across the velvety night, and when a shooting star streaks through the blackness, turning night into day, make a wish. Think of me. And make your life spectacular. I know I did.